This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 372 in the series. This segment shares part of the Franklin, Mass. Town Council meeting held on Wednesday, October 21, 2020. The meeting was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirement of this pandemic period. In this second segment, this covers the presentation and discussion on the Beaver Street Interceptor, which could become the largest public works project the town has taken on recently other than building a school. The show notes contain link to the meeting agenda and to the presentation document. The segment runs approximately 50 minutes. So let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting of October 21, 2020.
Number two, or B, which is Beaver Street Interceptor. Brutus and Doug, I think, both here.
Good evening, Chairman. You can kind of do a little tag team effort here again. Okay.
I was going to say, you're bringing in the reinforcements.
Yes. So we're going to talk about the Beaver Street Interceptor. We talked about this a couple of times in the past. And I think we all know this is an issue in town.
Yeah, there too. Next to the door.
There you go.
Nice. All right, so people can get the view.
Training 101.
So I'm accompanied by Scott Haynes. He works for one of our consulting engineers firms, Arcadius. And then also Doug Marr, you met earlier, who's also here with me tonight. Our case has been working for the town of Franklin since before I've been here. They have a lot of sewer knowledge. And I think you know that we basically, for lack of a word, commissioned them to look at the Beaver Street Interceptor and the options for it. So this is what the presentation is. Next slide. I'm going to give you a little background on it. So this is a Beaver Street Interceptor, and you can kind of see it's the red line down the center, and it collects about almost 70% of the sewer in town. Okay. The reason we call it an interceptor because it collects everything, and then it goes to a specific spot. So it intercepts everything. But it's all, you can see the pink out area, where it goes and what it does, okay? It's an asset that, you know, is over 106 years old that was put in at the time you saw the picture in the beginning. I can't imagine it was ever designed to handle the capacity it does now. They, you know, back in 1916, they thought Franklin would be what it is today. But it is, it's an asset to the town. It's very vital to the economic development of the town and maintaining our town. It's also a huge liability, is which I need to get into, okay? Next slide. Okay, so this kind of shows you where the Beaver Street Interceptor is, and the part that's real concern, we're looking at basically options. Where Beaver Street is, if folks at home, you know, you go across the train tracks and you're going towards Beaver Field, it's right there. If you look off to the right-hand side, it goes along the Mine Brook, it heads up towards 495, makes a right-hand turn under the Franklin Mall, and then goes out. It used to daylight out in the where all those new apartments are on Pond Street. That used to be what we call the sewer fields. The raw sewage used to go out there. They let it dry. Someone would go out rake and clean it up, and that was it. That was before DEP. But they clean that all up, and we got the big old sewer plant. So it ties in now. It's called the Mine Brook Interceptor, their interceptor, and that's taken over Medway, where ultimately it's treated. So I can tell you in this day and age, basically speaking, I don't know of a worse location to put an interceptor, okay? This is by far the worst. I don't know any other town that has anything else like this, okay? Is if you look at the picture on the south-hand side, there's a brook. Think about it, a river, okay? On the right-hand side of it is train tracks, okay? There is no access to this. On top of that is 140. And then when they did 495 and then however it was built, the mall down there, they buried the manholes. There's 40 feet you got to go down into some of these manholes. It used to be like surface, like the picture in the front. They're 40 feet down when they filled that all in there. So access is very, very difficult. You know, I think I did a presentation where we did a repair on a culvert out there a while ago.
Yes.
We had to, you know, we had worked with a train. I mean, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars. Thank God the railroad worked with us, you know, because they carried all the materials out there because there was no access. So if we have an emergency out there, if it fails, it's a big problem. So this is something we've been aware of for a number of years. And I want you to think about the asset as a whole. things we've done to improve it, because basically it's the flow that goes through it, okay? So we first thing we do, we start metering it, okay? We put a meter way down the end. We want to see how much flow is going through this, go through it. We've cleaned the inceptor twice now, right? Three times, okay? The first time was really bad. It had never been cleaned in, I'm going to say, 90 years, and we got, tons and tons of stuff out of there. So obviously, if you get that stuff out of the pipe, it cleans it out, so we get a better flow through there. We rehabbed a bunch of the manholes down there. We rebuilt them so structurally they could be safe. The other thing we found out, there was trees growing. I love trees, but big trees growing on this pipe that you saw exposed in the first picture that we all removed, because if these trees ever fell, it could have pulled it over, you know, in these storms. So we removed all these trees, and now we vegetated the management plan down there, so we don't have that anymore. And then we repaired and did some of the culverts. You know, through the development of, 140, all that's, my other favorite term, stormwater. All the stormwater comes off the hill, flows down there, flows under the pipe. Everything else causes a lot of problems, because once again, these old culverts were never designed to handle that rain load from the parking lots up top. The next thing we started doing in town was what's called I&I. That's infiltration intrusion into the pipe. Okay, so it's either groundwater getting in or people directing water into the pipe, like leaders, like drain water into the pipe. So we did a lot of study in the area, and we went out and we found a lot of leaks in the pipe, and we fixed a lot of pipes. We put the what's called in situ. We put a plastic liner inside these old leaks. So these old clay pipes that not just here, but this is in the uptown area, they would leak. So we put a plastic liner, vinyl type thing, and that keeps the water from going in. So that reduces the flow. Because presently right now about 3 million gallons a day goes through there. I mean, gives or take, depending what's going on. I can show you through the metering that we've reduced 1 million gallons a day. So that helps the pipe and extends the period of pipe. And we also did a bunch of I&I things. The manholes. We lined all the manholes so the manhole would leak. Two things about this, they're old brick manholes or they're old clay. When you line them, they create structural type things. So it's good. It helps that in other parts of town. And then basically general improvements that we've done. I think you guys know I'm pretty aggressive about grease traps in town. Anytime a restaurant comes in, we make sure they put an outside grease trap on it. I think some councils call me up because people complain about them because they're expensive. But that keeps that grease, we call fog, fat, oils, and greases out of the system. So that's a big thing. That's been regulations that we follow through the time. Where I always tie everything together, stormwater, drinking water, and sewer. Our water conservation program in town is very, very good for the system. Not just what we talk about, the mandate stuff from EPA, our low flow toilet program that we do, our faucets and code like that has reduced the amount of sewer that goes out of a house. So that has helped the sewer system. And the other thing that we've done in Franklin, which was, I don't know if a lot of other people do it around here, but we started a while ago, and it was a pretty good idea. Bill's idea, or maybe your idea, but the larger, if you think of the larger apartment complexes, like the one up on Union Street was the first one we did, or over in Dean Ave, we actually make them put in a huge holding tank. Because if you think about the sewer flow, most of the time people are using the sewer is in the morning and the evening. What do? You get up in the morning, you take a shower, you flush the toilet, right? Then no one's home, and the peak goes down. You follow me? Then people come home at night, they're cooking, they're cleaning, they're eating again, and maybe take a shower after work, so the use goes up again. So we create these huge holding tanks, like these large apartment complexes. They have to hold all their sewer for the day, and we make them discharge it at night. So they'll send all their sewer out at 2-3 o'clock in the morning when there's not a lot of sewer flow in town. So that helps out, okay? So we've done all these wonderful things, but you know what? We're kind of at capacity, and the system's getting old. So this is where we're at now. This is why we have to do something with this. And Scott's going to make a presentation. He did a model on the whole thing, and he can explain that. But we came up with three alternatives. We looked at a lot of different things. But there's options, like everything else. Options is money, and that's we got to try to figure out what's the best one, of course, to go. Thank you.
Thanks, Brutus. Hi, and welcome. Thank you for having me. As Brutus said, I've been working in town here since 2003, just before Brutus started here, and I've been happy to do it, happy to still be here. Before various council members before with different projects, I think Brutus was reading from my resume when he listed all the things that we were doing, with the exception of the holding tank. I can't take credit for that. That was the brain trust of the town itself. So if I can go to the next slide, please. Yeah, we looked at three alternatives, and what we did first, before we looked at the alternatives, we looked at the existing sewer, and this tells a lot. This is the profile of the sewer as it exists now, and on the left end, starting on the left, that's the high end of it at Cottage Street, and it's all decent, you know, laid at the correct depths down to Beaver Street, and then it goes through the easements, and the lower portion in here is through the easements, the wetlands that Brutus talked about being so bad. And the worst end of it is when you get up near the mall, it gets to 40 feet deep. These white vertical lines are the manholes along the interceptor.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a 45-foot manhole, 45-plus deep manhole, and it crosses under 140. It's, I think, about 35 feet at that area. So it's, again, as Brutus said, very inaccessible, very tough to get at. We cleaned it three times. It should have been cleaned a lot more than that in the 106 years it's been in existence. But the hydraulic model, not to get too technical, but the blue in the pipe is the water as it sits today. And we looked at a 50-year build-out period, and we ran, if you're familiar with storm events, there are 10-year, 25, 100-year events. We ran design storms of 10 and 25, because that's typically what you want to design for. And what it showed is these locations of historic overflows. This one's just downstream of Cottage after it goes under the railroad tracks. And this one's right smack in the wetlands, which is hydraulically connected to Chilson Beach and Mine Brook and everything else. So bad news there. But we'll get back to this depth issue. Next slide, please. And I apologize for all the information flying at you at once here. Originally I thought I was going to do a PowerPoint-wise, but I had a little issue here with the technical. So starting at the high end here, which is at Cottage Street. This alternative number one was just to rehabilitate it in place. And Brutus referred to cured-in-place pipelining, and that's exactly what it sounds like. You put a pipeline in the existing pipe. You use the hose pipe. So you'll hear me say lining in a lot of places. This alternative mainly looked at lining the pipe. And without getting into each of the individual sections and the sizes, there's only one piece that we would have to upsize from 16-inch to 18-inch to alleviate this overflow shown in red here. Everything else is lined right through the wetlands. So what you're left with is the same pipe, but renewed internally, and it's going to last another 50 to 100 years, but it's still in the easements. Next slide, please. Second alternative, we actually looked at about five alternatives originally, but we discounted a few of them because they weren't any better than the three. We picked the best three, looked at them closely. This is similar to the first one, but instead of lining it in place, we replaced it pretty much from top, from the high end to the bottom end. And the piece I'd like to point out about this, other than you don't alleviate this overflow in the wetlands, is that here's the Route 140 crossing that I talked about. You're still doing a 35-foot crossing there. Mm. You're still left with 45-foot manholes around the back of the mall. Very inaccessible. We had a subcontractor go into those manholes three occasions. I've never been in them. I might have done it when I was younger, but now with two kids and other things going on at my age, I don't know if I'd fit either, but anyway. So that's the second alternative. Scrolling down to the third alternative, and this is the one we looked at most critically and really try to figure out the best route to take. At the bottom end, similar to the first one, we only need to line this section of pipe as a cost savings. We still need to upsize this one to alleviate these overflows, and then we can line it all the way along here, along past Public Works Way and up to Beaver Street itself. We can line it. Next slide, please. And then here's where we think about what do we do with the piece in the easements. So starting at the bottom, here's where you want to intercept it. You want to get it out of the wetlands, out of the easements, and out of the place where you eventually get to 40-foot manholes. So that would entail running a new pipe, shown in blue, down to what would be a new proposed Beaver Street pump station, which would pump up Beaver Street, and it's the yellow and black dotted line, would be the force main, pumping up West Central Street to the intersection of Old West Central and the access road to Tri-County. Going back down to the Beaver Street area, there is one connection within the easement, an extension off of Panther Way, that currently flows down and then flows northwest up through the intercept. So we would have to reverse this pipe. Fortunately, as you may remember from the profile, this is a very flat section, so we can flow it the other way, rebuild the pipe flowing the other way without a lot of regrading or deep cuts or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So that flow would also go down to the pump station, be pumped up. Moving further up, what do we do with this? We abandon it, hence the black X's. We would abandon everything all the way up to, it comes back out on West Central Street. And then at the very top end of this pipe, at the very top end of the rehabilitation, or the replacement, I should say. We would discharge to that manhole at Tri-County Access and put in a new piece of about 1,000 linear feet of 15-inch PVC flowing down to the existing interceptor here. There would be the need for two more pump stations, one very small one, just to collect the mall itself and pump it across 140. Again, eliminating these 40-foot deep manholes, building this at nominal 6 to 10 feet depth. And one more thing that this really helps with is there's currently a connection from a gravity connection that flows under 495. So it's tough to get under 140. Forget getting under 495. So we would eliminate this. We would fill this with probably some controlled density fill. Put a new pump station in on the west side of 495 and pump just a short distance up to the existing system. And this system flows up to the Mine Brook. So it's Mine Brook Circle. I think it's just the Mine Brook pump station. That's owned by the Charles River Pollution Control District. And they pump across 495, but that's their problem.
Is that cross-country or is that on a road?
I'm sorry?
Just a cross-country.
This force main here?
Yeah.
I think right now it's shown as cross-country. I don't think there's a road that's the embankment. And again, this is, I'm sorry, this one here, are you talking about?
Yes.
Yes, same thing. I believe this
runs cross-country.
Yes, exactly. And this is just a preliminary study. We didn't spend a lot. We spent a lot of time, but not a lot of money doing this. We've been looking at this for about a year and a half, mostly figuring out how to do this. But when we get into the preliminary design, we'll figure out the best way to route it, taking the fewest easements, avoid the wetlands, get away from the train tracks, all that stuff.
Thank you.
Welcome. And then the punchline, the comparison of alternatives from a cost perspective at the top, and then from a benefit analysis at the bottom. So at the top, you see alternative one, lining it basically throughout about $9 million project. Replacing the pipe in place is $13 million, and we've updated that since. It's more like $15 million. And then the third alternative, as is often the case, the best alternative, would be the most costly at about $25 million. But we didn't want to just present it that way, and the DPW asked us, well, how can we explain that? Well, the best way is you look at the cost and benefits. We looked at eight parameters that pertain to, as they pertain to each of the three alternatives, and we weighted each of the alternatives by level of importance. We went back and forth, the DPW, the Water and Sewer Department weighed in. This is more important, that's less important. So the way the numbers came out, the overriding thing was obviously the construction cost. The lowest number here is the least advantageous. So the higher the score, the better. One being the worst, five being the best. So from a cost perspective, obviously the least expensive is alternative one, and alternative three is the most expensive. But when you get into most of the other categories, particularly the risk of overflows, environmental concerns, accessibilities, Brutus's guys can't get to that. Doug's guys can't get to that. Their crews can't get in there to those easements. So how are they going to maintain it? What if we have a catastrophic failure? So for that reason, alternative three weighs more heavily for all those other aspects. And at the end of the day, it comes out to be about a 35% better, if you will, advantage over the other alternative one, and 65% advantage over alternative two. And that's, you can slide up to the next slide, because this is interesting. This is, I'm pretty sure, I wasn't there, but pretty sure this is where it went around the mall, when the mall wasn't there. And you can see these guys are standing in a tunnel. This wasn't excavated from the ground up. It was probably 25 or 30 feet deep at the time, and it's been mounted over. But they actually dug through this rock. So that's what we'd be doing again if we ever had to replace a break down there.
Wow.
Or a manhole failure.
Love that they're in suits.
I don't know. Is that Councilor Jones?
That's the town council.
1940.
Could have been my dad.
Councilor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I see this. I feel like I've been talking about this for 10 years with the DPW director, and I see this as like an action-packed movie where you're sitting down and there's the ticking time bomb that's going to go off, and you got to get it, because I don't know if many people remember Plymouth about,
yes,
God, what, 5 years ago, Brutus? 4 years ago, Plymouth, when they basically came out and said, nobody flush your toilets, our interceptor's down.
Right.
And that is coming to us quicker than we know. You know, and I keep saying it, and I feel like I'm a doomsdayer with this, but people don't understand in our community how much this is a huge item. We're talking about a $9 million, $13 million, or $25 million bill that's coming to us. And if, when we talk about money, it just doesn't exist. So my question is, well, I guess my first, I'd like to give Brutus some kudos because he continues to bring it every single year to us to talk about it. And, you know, to his staff and all of you, thank you. I mean, because at the end of the day, at some point, people are going to be sitting in my shoes or in our shoes here saying, why didn't you ever tell us about this? And I hope they go back to the highlight reel of the last 10 years and go, we've been telling you about this. We talked about this last year. I drive up and down 140 every single day, and I just don't understand how three isn't going to get us depths of manholes that I know the pump station's going to be able to take care of. But aren't we still going to have long and deep manhole covers, or will the pump station be enough to bring that over and bring the manhole covers short? I guess my first question.
Yeah, the latter. It will. Alternative okay. three will result in nominal depth, 5 to 10, maybe some 12-foot cuts.
And the $25 million includes the pump stations that would be required?
Yep, that includes the three pump stations.
What's a pump station go for these days?
Well, the Beaver Street.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking, right? Like, for a neighborhood, it's a couple hundred thousand, so.
The Beaver Street pump station, the largest one at the south end, just before you get into the easements, that, I don't remember exactly, but that could be several million dollars out of the 25, say $3 million. Yeah. But then the smaller ones up at Grove Street being the second largest, that might be $1.5 million, and the one at the Franklin Village Mall, that's only less than $1 million pump station.
Do we run into any environmental concerns that if we went with alternative number one, knowing that it doesn't rate the highest, don't get me wrong, but if we went with alternative number one, do we see any down the road environmental concerns that it's going to, EPA, DPH, somebody's going to come in and say, yeah, this is great, glad you did it, spend another $13 million and bring it across the road?
The only thing, no, because we are technically permitted to do that now, and you are allowed to permit through wetlands and stuff like that. What that does not take off the table is if we had a catastrophic event, okay? And then you're going to find ourselves in a position where, like what happened in Plymouth, and they weren't in environmental area, but if something comes down. So in Plymouth, their pumping station, their sewage was one-third of what we're doing through here because they're just taking care of a downtown area. And they're into it for $60 million. Because you know what happens at that point? DPs, you got to do it now. You got to fix it. This is why if we have a plan in place, it's obviously cheaper. I don't want to say it's a maintenance program, but we have a plan in place to go forward. If we had a catastrophic failure, we don't have holding capacity. So it's just going to keep going out to the mine brook. We're going to be responsible for cleaning it up. Yep. We're going to have to, get bypass down there, emergency work. The contracts that do it are very, they're very talented, but you know what? It's when you need them, they're expensive. So
Their 60 million, and I hate to interrupt you, I apologize, but their 60 million could be our 200 million.
Yes.
With cleanup.
The other thing too is when we talk about the financing aspect, because I was very curious about it, I read about it. They actually had to, because their sewer system reserves obviously didn't have the money, so they actually had to use general funding. They had to take it out of tax base to pay for this infrastructure, where we have the choice. Obviously the sewer pays just the rate payers in town. And additionally, don't forget, if you have a plan together, we get to get SRF funding, which saves us. I mean, how much does it save us in our plant, Doug? Like $1 million?
Yeah.
You know, $1 million on a $13 million project, just on funding, because, we planned, we applied for it. And obviously, I got to tell you, you go for SRF funding for this, or you're getting it in a heartbeat. Okay. Because it's no one's gonna say no to this.
No,
but, so you save a couple $1 million there. So that's when it's planned out. So that's the good part of it. Mm-hmm. And that SRF funding, that's for all three options. Don't get me wrong, it's not the big one. It could be the small one, but at least you're planned. But you're still gonna have that problem. Potentially could fail.
And not that we're able to do this, but if we were to say to you today, alternative one or two or whatever it might be, how long would it take for you guys to be ready to start
implementing?
We
did talk about it. We're about 2 years. Okay. I mean, that's if it's tomorrow.
So here's where I sit on this. And this is going to sound a little weird, but would you know what, and I know Chris isn't here tonight, but do you know what our bond capacity is currently?
Remember, this would be out of the enterprise fund.
Okay. So it's
completely
not something.
It's a completely separate account. So, I mean, I don't think our debt in the sewer fund is actually, I think it's actually quite good right now.
It is.
I mean, the sewer fund and the enterprise fund is in good shape financially. I think what the next two steps would be is to pick an alternative, design it out, which just takes a little while. We'd have to fund that. Just the design of this would be a costly endeavor. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you would actually go out to get the SRF fund and go through the financing of it.
And I guess I'm going to repeat exactly what you said a couple minutes ago, but the economy is going to change
right
at some point. We all understand that. We have a great rating right now. We have a great opportunity to get a bond at almost nothing and pay almost zero interest on it. We have the availability for bond funds. It might be in our best interest to start looking at that direction sooner rather than later, so that we're paying $13 million for it, or maybe 14 by the time we pay the bond back. But at the end of the day, I don't want to be sitting here, and I'm using alternative two because it's in the middle of the road, but I don't want to be sitting here 2 years from now looking at not a $200 million cleanup effort, but maybe a $13 million project that we're paying $20 million by the time we pay it back because the bonds have changed, because the economy's changed. I'm sorry.
No.
Finish. When you're done.
Yeah. Okay. I know people aren't going to like to hear me say that, but what at the end of the day, it's almost like getting free money to be able to do this and make sure that we're never saying to our citizens who are on the public sewer line, sorry, don't flush your toilet for the next 2 weeks. Because if we think, telling them not to water their lawn is bad, it's going to get really bad when you say don't flush your toilet. So, I'm not trying to be a doomsdayer. I've been doing this for 10 years with Brutus and with many of you, and I'm so afraid what that's going to happen. We've seen it time and time again where we've said, oh my God, this could happen someday. And 2 weeks later, we're all looking at it. Yeah. So I know others want to talk and I don't want to monopolize the time. So thank you.
Jamie, you had a response for Matt.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through your counsel. Councilor Kelly, you are not a doomsdayer, okay? I want to be very clear, and I'm really serious. That is a proactive, smart
absolutely
message.
Absolutely is.
And I'm going to tell you why. We have a AA+ bond rating. We're one step away from the top bond rating you can get. And to get to that top step, I want to mention, is extremely difficult due to the size of our community, right? That usually you get to the AAA when you're in a smaller town, a Dover or Medfield or something like that. So you're not a doomsdayer at all. In fact, proactively jumping on top of this right now is really a smart idea, because it's still, we're not going to Google search the design and have it done tomorrow. It's going to take some time. And so in FY20, in the calendar year 2021 coming up, you're putting the community in an excellent position to be able to get a competitive construction rate when you go out to bid this project due to the changing economic times that are out there. And in addition to the 0% bond, you get a 2% SRF loan from the state. That's a financially smart move to make. It is not doomsday at all. You're putting the community in a position to be successful in 2 years or a year and a half or whenever it is when we can get the actual construction bid out. You're actually saving the community and the sewer ratepayers likely millions and millions of dollars. And there's no guarantee. Just because you put something out to bid doesn't require you to have to do it. Right. We do this all the time in our procurement office, where we do things to bid, but that doesn't mean we always go out and do the project. I mean, obviously, a lot of times we do. But just because we get it, you want to look for that competitive bid. So I don't think what you're saying is doomsday at all. I think it's a really sound fiscal decision. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jamie. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, Matt had some very, very, very valid points, and I completely agree with most of the statements that were said. Look, Brutus,
not huh?
Not all.
most of them. Brutus, 10 years ago, when Matt and I first joined the council, that was one of the worst presentations that we ever heard, because it basically put the fear of God in us in regards to what could go wrong in the level of the Beaver Interceptor. It's always been in the back of my head. You've heard me bring it up a couple of times during water discussions when I was supposed to be talking about sewer during water discussions. But it's always that daunting issue that never seems to get addressed. And Matt basically said most of what I was thinking in regards to, it's one of those problems that we need to address. We need to address early. And I think we should get on. One of my questions being more or less an engineering issue. In regards to, I'll say alternative two is an option. We're going up to East Central Street to pump up towards basically the replacement alternative with the pump. What if we could, in a perfect world, size it to not only what our needs are today, but what the future might be, what would that look like? So in other words, what I'm thinking is, on top of what Councillor Kelly said, we're putting forth alternatives to get the system up to par so it's meeting our needs. But what about the future? What if we wanted to say, for instance, think about what's going to happen 50 or even another 100 years from now, where we're going to need the interceptor to be larger? Would 18 inches be enough? Would 24 inches be enough? 30 inches? You know, what are we talking about? In a perfect world, if we could have our cake and eat it too, what would we do?
We did look at that, we look at the 50-year. That's the build out.
The very first slide I have with the profile there.
Yeah.
It's tough to see, but at the top there, that is the it's a 50-year build out. We look at 2070.
Okay.
So we projected flows. We talked to Mike Maglio and the engineering departments and
planning,
and looked at what are there any big developments, where they are. We looked at growth, population growth projections over the next 25 and 50 years, and we designed it. We haven't designed it, but we did the planning and the alternatives analysis on 2070 flows.
Would you consider it unusual that they had put the size piping in that they did 106 years ago for that type of line back then? I mean, does that seem a little extraordinary that they thought that for that far ahead for themselves that they put an 18-inch line in back in 1914, was it?
1914, exactly. Yeah. That's an excellent question. I've thought about that often too, and apparently engineers back then were smarter than we are now. Because
exactly. The
population was probably 2,000.
Exactly. It was a cow town in 1914.
The only other reason I can think, other than they had great foresight into thinking this is going to be the next, you know, Alaskan pipeline, is that the contractor had that pipe available.
Huh.
And so they said, let's get rid of it. Oh, we'll put it in the sewer.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm
kind of hoping they were smart and that they were thinking forward, and that might not be the case. But I think in regards to that thought process, is that we're thinking in that same line, is that we're looking forward to the future because, you know, population being for all intents and purposes exponential in some senses, we should be thinking towards the future in regards to what we build out. And I couldn't agree more with Jamie's statements and Matt's statements in regards to thinking about this sooner than later, not for obvious reasons that we don't want any failures, but for the simple fact that it would be a significant cost if we didn't address it now. Other than that, I completely agree. By looking at number, I think alternative two is also one of the ones I thought seemed like the most logical way to go. And in regards to the pumping stations, that the comment that was made earlier, I'm just an electrician, not a plumber, but the pumping stations only need to pump up to the point where it's grade, it's grade, not all the way up to the street, but just to where the flow is now going to flow downhill.
Correct.
So it wouldn't actually have to go all the way up to three. It would just have to go to a level which the pitch is sufficient enough to drain down to the lowest point. Okay. Just checking.
Yep, that is
correct. Thank you, Councilor.
Just one thought. When we looked at going up 140, obviously we try to think about everything. Obviously, dealing with the state and cutting an open trench right down the middle of 140, they're not going to want to do that. You guys ain't got to do that. Economic development, you know, the economy, because everybody goes through there. So one of the ones we're looking at is basically a boring, like we did out here. Remember, we just put a hole in the ground. We pushed the pipe up underneath the ground. So that's one of the alternatives we're looking at. It's less intrusive. And we spent a lot of time, like, going up to the old West Central Street. You know, whatever we could cut out, we did. So it would be, we're taking that into a lot of account too. It's not just the pipe, the manhole. It's about, you know, the construction and the development, because, you know, like when we did the downtown area, you know, there was a lot of pain up there. Mm-hmm. When we got done, it's wonderful, but that year and a half could be tough. So that's one of the alternatives we looked at going through there.
Thank you, Brutus. Councilor DeLorco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brutus, great presentation. Like we said, Councilor Kelly said just about everything we need to say, but we are scared about this. But this $9 million, is that when you sleeve it that you're talking about?
No. Yes, that's alternative one where you just put the cured-in-place pipe in it.
Yep. But that shrinks it, right, if you sleeve it, right?
It does, but minimally. The pipe is expanded by air or hot water, hot water, so it adheres to the host pipe, the existing pipe, to almost the same size. And you don't lose any capacity because it's a smoother pipe. So
it flows. Okay. It flows. I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of agree with my fellow councilors. I mean, if we're going to do it, we should do it like the people did 106 years ago to make it last for 106 years. You know, I know it's a big hit, but I think sooner than later. So maybe the people sitting here 106 years ago say, hey, that council might have been smart.
Yeah, they didn't sit in the trench.
Little did they know.
I need that picture. Anyway, yeah.
Thanks. You're all set, Councilor DeLocco. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, Councilor DeLocco, I think maybe in like 10 years, everybody will think we were really smart okay. If we do something about it. I agree that it's one of these things that we worry about all the time when there's a catastrophic event,
yeah. When
there's a leak, it's like, then we're really in trouble, right? But I do have a couple questions about, so alternative one and two still stay in the Mine Brook.
Correct.
Is that, yep. That's correct, yep. Right? Correct. So if there's an event when the pipe is still in the Mine Brook, is that going to be, can we actually fix it? Is it going to be very difficult to fix? I find it's interesting that, you know, three is actually rated the highest for all of our payback, really, right? And like what the most important thing to do, and hopefully it will be, it'll last the longest. It's the highest advantageous to have this, but I worry about having the pipe stay in the brook area, and I was wondering if you could maybe explain a little bit more about what would happen if something still happens, even if it gets sleeved, the pipe gets sleeved.
Whether you did alternatives one or two, or no alternative, did nothing, and left the pipe in the easement, and you've had a failure of any type, and sleeving it and replacing it doesn't guarantee there's not going to be a failure. And the failure isn't just the structural collapse of the leaking of the pipe, it's the capacity, it's the 2070 buildup, the 50-year buildout.
Right. Right.
That happens sometimes in 100-year storms now. You're getting overflows. You know, most of the year, it can handle the flow. So anyway, so if you get a failure, you're going to wind, under alternatives one or two, you're going to wind up building alternative three.
Anyways,
so you'd be throwing
right. Money
after bad if you go exactly. Forward one or two is thinking.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And one more question.
Sure.
On your graph about that you mentioned a little while about the flow rate that you checked for. I'm just trying to scroll back to it. The 10 and 25 year storm events that you have. Mm-hmm. So there's the historic overflow areas, and then you have another red dot. Is that a potential overflow?
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry. That's that solid red dot at the left there is, yes, exactly. The hydraulic model predicted an overflow there. Again, with the sewer being where it is and as it is
right. Under
the 25-year storm event.
Okay.
And that's come to fruition. That's
Mr. Chairman, I can say for fact, in 2010, when we had the flooding, me and Dave Allard, our foreman, we were out just checking on stuff. And exactly where that happened, over by Franklin Paint,
mm-hmm. Okay?
And then we went over to Beaver Street, and just over, we were out there, and if you ever run a Dave Allard, we were walking down the thing, and there's these manholes. You ever see a manhole just lift up and go off? And they're going off, and we're sitting there looking at each other, because it was dumping right into the Mine Brook, right? And all of a sudden, it turned purple, because all the purple paint was gone.
Oh, no.
It was just a funny story. But, I mean, you guys think it goes out there, there's so much, you know, water that's going through there. But those are the two exact points that we did have the problem out there. So, but those, it does come up. So I think what Scott's trying to say is even with the capacity, we still potentially face overflows. And I think we all know that, you know, our environment's changing. We're just seeing peaks and flows of this, you know, these windstorms one day, and then we get tremendous flooding the next day. You know, a couple of years ago, it was the snow. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, and this is all product of it, and it's going to be affected by it. So,
thank you, Bruce. Councilor Hamblin, you still have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one other thing. I think it's I think it's interesting that the middle price project is actually has the lowest score, right? So I was wondering.
You put that back up.
Like why, if you could explain a little bit about that difference.
Sure, yeah, and alternative two, again, I went through it quickly, but alternative two is typically done as a baseline. What if we just replace the sewer where it exists with new pipe?
Right.
So we're not upsizing, we're upsizing one section down by Cottage, but we're just putting back what's there now in a new pipe, basically. And honestly, we never really gave it much thought that this would ever be a serious alternative.
Okay.
And sure enough, the numbers, the ranking, it's still bad maintenance. You still can't access it. You're not increasing the capacity. Mm-hmm. Lining the pipe at least takes care of a few of those things.
Right.
Replacing it in place the way it is
just the worst.
Yeah, but you do it as a baseline analysis.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Hamblin. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. I've been hearing about this for a lot of years. You guys have dealt with it, so I'm brand new to this. So I'm learning a lot tonight. But I guess in a nutshell, like you guys said, it's about the age and the capacity is something we really need to know about right now. And if it breaks, which is, I mean, you can shut the water off. We can bring bottled water into our house. But if you shut the sewer off, it's a nightmare. It's over. You know, how do we fix that? And how many months would it take to get that back online? Or, you know, I mean.
Nobody.
You know, lots of money.
Years.
Yeah, right. So this is something. Well, one quick question. I think a lot of people, if you did this job now, would it last another 120? Is that what, or someone said 50 years?
Since I'm not going to be here, absolutely.
That's a great answer.
I agree.
Looks good for my house.
No, seriously, we designed the design of sewers like these back when they built them then was probably, they expected them to last 50 years from a structural standpoint, a corrosive standpoint, and you see they've lasted 100 years. So right now, when we design sewers, they're PVC, the more sustainable materials than the clay and the concrete, which can corrode into sewage conditions. So they are, we typically say that the design life is 100 years, honestly.
Okay. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll dig
thank
you up.
Thank you, Councilor Chairman. Any other councilor? Councilor Bazanti.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I get what's going on. I've heard about it too. I just don't understand. And I appreciate Councilor Kelly's points about raising bonds, and we're very well rated right now and stuff. I just don't get how towns like us spend money that we don't have going forward for a project like this. I mean, sure, I'd like to see us go first class. Everybody wants to go first class, but we don't have the money. I don't get it. What are we doing here? We don't have money for a first class septic sewage redesign. So how can we consider a $25 million project over a $9 and $13 million project? I just don't get. I know bond ratings and raising money through bonds has become a practice for many municipalities, but I'm just tired of seeing us spend money that we probably don't have and not going to have. And I just can't see how we can go first class on this project, even though it will probably last. Of course, going first class lasts longer, better, easier. However, I do see the maintenance on the maintenance scale on between 2 and 3. I just don't understand how we keep doing this and spending money we don't have towards. And granted, I know it's a sewer project, and I know it's a very important thing, and I know the interceptor has been being discussed for many years, but. It's more of a question to me how to get this done, and I don't think we can afford to go first class on this. If we did an alternative to middle of the road, maybe in 10, 20 years would have to be looked at again, but maybe we'll have the money then. We're in the middle of in my opinion, I mean, things are bad out there, and I don't see them getting better for a long time. So if you guys want to try to pass a $25 million sewer interceptor thing in the middle of COVID with people losing their jobs and not having any money, be my guest, but I know how I'm gonna vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Bazanti. Any other councilors? Is there anybody in the audience that has a question or a comment? Okay. Jamie, would you like to close it?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through you to the council and everybody watching at home. I just want a couple quick notes. I just want to really thank Brutus and Scott For an unbelievable presentation. As we've heard before, everybody's been talking about this for a long time. I want to note, this is the furthest we've really come as a community to moving this to closer to a reality. We've talked about it, we've seen the photos, but this is the furthest analysis this town has done on this interceptor. And they've done a great job. They've spent countless months looking at all the numbers and the data, and they've really put together some great alternatives for the community to choose from. As next steps, I do think one thing is not on here, and I'm surprised nobody really pointed it out directly, although Councilor Bisanti did kind of touch upon it in a minute. For a second, was the cost of ratepayers and the financial model associated with these. And obviously, we've got tens of thousands of ratepayers in the town. There's no one person that's going to foot this whole bill. And so what I'd at least like to do is to be able to move forward if everybody's comfortable. It is going to be a costly design to do the actual design once a choice is picked. But I do think it's worth at least looking at what the cost of the ratepayers is going to be, what the different scenarios might be, if that's okay with the council. And I'm certainly open to Scott's expertise or Brutus, if there are any other next steps that you guys think is important, certainly open to them. But I do think the big question that many will be asking is, how much is this going to cost me? And how are we going to finance this out? And what are the options in front of us? And what does that look like? And I think that that's a big question that's not quite answered on here yet, because that's not the step we're at. But that's clearly the next step that people are going to ask. And we respect that, obviously. So,
there's no question about that, Jamie. I do believe that we need to take that step, and I'll get a consensus from the council. Certainly, we can't sit on our hands any longer. As Councillor Kelly so eloquently said early on, we've been looking at this for too long. And it's a bomb waiting to go off. And we need to do our due diligence as elected officials of the town and move forward in solving the problem, whether it be option one, option two, or option three, or option four, five, or six, whatever option. But I agree with you, Jamie. I think the next step is to look at the financial picture as to how this would look, and then we'll have another discussion and then move forward beyond that. Everybody comfortable with that?
Absolutely.
Good.
Just one quick question before you finish. You probably can answer this yourself, because you know that you've been working on these projects a lot. But to Jamie, to you, just for clarification, this would be no different than any other capital improvement that we would do, where it would be a 25-year bonded project. Absolutely. Correct? That this is something that, for all intents and purposes, based on some of the doom and gloom numbers that could come up, that not for all intents and purposes, if 15 years from now, say hypothetically speaking, we're in a much better fiscal position, that we could actually pay this down. Is that not true? Just like any other capital project that we have?
It's extraordinarily ambitious, but yes, it's true.
Okay, we find it. But yeah, nonetheless, you're absolutely, it's 25-year bonded
project. It's exactly like some of the many other debt exclusions that we've done for schools.
Just for clarity.
Same.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very much the same thing.
Thank you.
One thing.
Yeah.
That does happen, what Councilor Jones is talking about, because I can tell you we worked the Charles River Pollution Control District, and we assessed, we did a $25 million project over there that we're paying off. So that debt's going down, okay? But what also happened last year, because of a lot of this work we did with the INI and actually water, I had estimated everything else. I get the call from the district. We were $400,000 less than we had to pay for our assessment over there because of this work we've been doing. So that's money that you can be associated and use. So it does change. It does happen. And, those days do happen when you get more money.
And again, as we just spoke about, looking at the financial picture as the next step is the right step for us, because then we look and we see, do we want to go with what option and what makes the most sense for the community? So I'd like to see this come back, Jamie, sooner rather than later. As Councillor Kelly and Councillor Jones
myself, Councilor DeLocco, that have been here a long time. We've been talking about this year in and year out, and it's time we step to the plate and start the next stage, whatever that next stage is. So sooner rather than later.
Excellent.
Brutus, thank you very much.
Good job, Brutus.
Thanks, Brutus.
Thank you.
Great job.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, thank you. Thank you all very much. Great presentation. Eye-opening for sure.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.